Hey, hey, my fellow dream chasers, it's Princess Fizz here. Welcome to another episode of I Have a Dream Show, bringing you multimillionaires from around the world to hear their unique journeys to success, great business wisdom, free mentoring and inspiration. Now, if you're looking to boost your online presence as a small business owner and stand out from the noise, you have to check out my free 10-day course on how to create an amazing web TV show or podcast for any industry. Go to becomeamediapreneur.com and get instant access to the course, and I'll get you ready for launch within 10 days. If you're looking for a great way to build a strong network and land some high-paying customers, I recommend you check out LinkedIn training course at ihaveadreamshow.com/LinkedIn training. If you've seen my web TV shows and love my makeup, check out Moonstruck 3D Fiber Lashes, which is a best-selling product by Unique, at ihaveadreamshow.com/beauty. And if you prefer to watch the video shows, then you can go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows, where there's a library of all the I Have a Dream shows to date. And don't forget to become a free member at the ihaveadreamshow.com website for access to free business and marketing trainings and other resources that will help you grow your business. And you'll get added to the newsletter straight to your inbox so you don't miss another show. So now take out your notepads and enjoy the show. My guest today, absolutely extraordinary. He's been on my fellow entrepreneurs, Chris and Beasley's show, and I just kind of, when I heard him, I just started stalking him. You know, I just wanted to make sure that I knew everything about him. He's absolutely amazing. He's the author of Go Giver book, which actually in 3 weeks of launch it became the bestseller, and it's being launched in 21 different countries. And it's amazing. So we'll give you information on the Go Giver book. And also he's been sharing the stage with top leaders in the home business, entrepreneur business stage. So he's been addressing audiences to tens of thousands of people at a time. So absolutely sought after speaker. Please welcome Bob Berg. Thank you so much, Bob, for joining the show today.
Well, thank you so much, Princess Fizz. I appreciate being with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, the introduction is so important to me. I hope I introduced you right, Bob, because I know that I can edify you all day long, but the short kind of edification, I hope it's okay.
It was absolutely wonderful. Thank you.
Wonderful. Now, guys, what's going to happen is Bob's going to share his story. He's going to take you through his journey. What he did, what challenges he faced, what kind of environment that he used to be in, and just kind of drop some golden nuggets throughout the show. There's five kind of success laws that I want Bob to share today. So stay tuned and you'll find out what they are. And also, guys, you can ask questions as we go along. So as we go along, just kind of make them short, because I can't read essays when I'm on the show. So try and make them one lines and kind of be very direct with your questions. Okay, so Bob, let's go. I mean, wow, what an amazing adventure it's been for you. It's never always been like this, right? What's happened? I mean, what was your childhood like? Can you take us back through those years?
Well, I was very, very, very fortunate to be born into a family with great parents. Right. My mom and dad are my heroes to this day, and they are just wonderful, and they just celebrated their, I guess it would be 57th or 58th anniversary. Wonderful marriage and wonderful, loving parents. So very, very fortunate in that regard. They both grew up very poor, especially my dad, and they were entrepreneurial, and so I think I got the entrepreneurial bug because of that. They had a natural gift, I think, for providing value to others, and you know, my dad was the more sort of like I am, the more out front public person. Mom was a little bit more behind the scenes, but his dad would tell everybody always and never let anybody forget she's the one that made him what he was. And, you know, they're just a great partnership. So I had a wonderful example growing up. The difficulty I had was, more than anything, was, and I wouldn't, there wouldn't be a name for it for a long time growing up, but I had, and I've always had obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD as it's more commonly known. Not the kind where people joke around about, oh, I'm so OCD. No, I mean, I really had the obsessive compulsive disorder, and it's a horrible, just a terrible kind of, it's a chemical imbalance of the brain. Causes unwanted thoughts and intrusions and compulsions to try to magically get rid of them. Too long a story to tell. For anybody who wants more information on that, they can go to www.ocfoundation.org. They do a wonderful job with it. They're life changers. But this is something I struggled with just greatly. Any success I've been fortunate to have is in spite of it, not because of it. There's nothing good about it. There's nothing that you take away from it and say it's, other than it's probably given me a very strong sense of empathy for others.
Right, right. So with this challenge, what does it actually do? Does it slow down, sorry, I don't know much about it, but does it slow down learning? Does it slow down concentration? What is the actual...
Concentration makes concentration extremely difficult, but that's the least of it. It's basically the chemical imbalance that results in unwanted, horrible, ongoing thoughts that you're powerless to get rid of, and compulsions. They always look at it on, at least on American TV, and I don't know if they have this in the UK, but they often will have shows on it where they with hand washing, and they look at that as like the big, that's such a tip of the iceberg. You can't imagine what it's about. Anyway, without getting too much on that, just to give you some background of what I've had to overcome with that. So, you know, on the one hand, growing up with a great family, on the other hand, having personal demons that were just horrible. And I still have it. I mean, I always will, but it's under control, but it's something I live with every day. But I began my professional career as a broadcaster. I started in radio, and then I was with a small network-affiliated television station in Midwestern U.S. I worked my way up to late-night news anchor, but I really wasn't very good at it. I could read the news, but I wasn't very journalistic. I was young. I was 24 years old, didn't know much about the news, and didn't really care. I probably would have made a much better game show host than a newscaster. But, you know, that was an option. So eventually, or in very quick, after about 2 years, actually, I what I like to say, graduated into sales.
Right.
And, you know, Princess, while I understood intuitively that selling was about providing value to your prospects, customers, clients, I didn't know how to do it. I didn't know anything about sales. And the company I was with, we'll just say that their sales training was minimal at best. So I was really sort of left out on my own to figure it out, and I didn't really figure it out. So I stumbled around for a few months until I came across a book in the bookstore. This is 30 years ago, when bookstores were known more for selling books than having a coffee bar. So, but the book was How to Master the Art of Selling by Tom Hopkins, which today is a classic, of course. And I remember having hope and encouragement just from seeing the title, How to Master the Art of Selling. And I'm thinking, what? There's an art to this? There's a way to do it, a methodology, a system, if you will? I had no idea. So I got it, and I studied it, and I, you know, and in about 3 weeks, my sales just, wow, they went through the roof, as we say. It just, and I got hooked. I loved sales. I loved learning about it. I started studying Zig Ziglar, and I'm sure you've heard of Zig Ziglar.
Yep.
In fact, Zig's son, Tom, who's really carried on along with the rest of the Ziglar family, his dad's wonderful legacy. I just found out that Tom is going to be speaking over there in London in July, I believe.
Wow, excellent.
Great opportunity for people to see him live. Tom is wonderful. But I started studying Zig Ziglar, and I, you know, studied all the sales traders of the time and went to say, well, it really, what I found out, which I really enjoyed, was that learning sales was really learning about people. It was learning about how people thought, how they felt, so I started getting more that weren't necessarily sales related, but they were the classics like How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, As a Man Thinketh by James Allen, you know, and all these great Psycho-Cybernetics by Dr. Maxwell Maltz, The Magic of Thinking Big by Dr. David Schwartz, and all these books that while they didn't necessarily touch on sales, what they did is they taught us how to build ourselves from the inside.
Beautiful, absolutely. So,
success begins on the inside, manifests itself on the outside, and so it was really a great journey for me. I then worked my way up to sales manager of another company, then started showing others how to do what was working for me and for my team, and eventually started speaking on that topic, and it sort of evolved over the last, you know, 20-plus years.
That's amazing. I mean, your journey is absolutely inspiring. But can I just ask you, Bob, when you actually, first, I've got a couple of questions for you, okay? First of all, having parents as entrepreneurs, did they involve you in their businesses? So you kind of got an idea of how businesses work and how the sales process is. So you kind of have an early recognition of how it all works. And the second question, if you can lead on to that, is, what actually made you start studying sales? What were the problems that you're seeing, and what kind of solution were you seeking?
Well, I grew up, you know, working part-time in their business, like many kids do in their parents' business. Uh-huh. I wouldn't say that they necessarily involved me with the business end, per se. However, I got to see them live the life of an entrepreneur.
Right.
I got to see, you know, my dad working tons and tons of hours. I got to see that, you know, it was always about, you know, serving the clientele. I got to see that it was all about providing value. And I got to see that, you know, that as an entrepreneur, you don't necessarily, there's not a separation necessarily between work and home. There's, you know, it's just you live your life and you're part of what you, you know, what you do, and which is a neat thing. I mean, I love that. Other people might not. And so I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all. I don't think everyone's cut out for entrepreneurship. I think a lot of people are, but not everyone. Carol Roth wrote a wonderful book called The Entrepreneurial Equation, in which, you know, part of her book is showing you where maybe entrepreneurship isn't the right thing for you. But you know what? I think for the people who are watching this and who are, you know, who are your coaching clients or who are people who just tune into this show, it's because they are entrepreneurs.
Exactly.
Or they want to be entrepreneurs. They have that kind of spirit. They want the freedom. And you know, even though they say, well, when you're an entrepreneur, when you own your own business, you have, you know, as many employee or as many bosses as you have customers, because it's always about pleasing them. The customer is the boss, but you know what? There's still nothing like being the person who makes the decisions as to how you're going to do it. And to me, there's nothing like entrepreneurship. It's a wonderful feeling, but again, it's not for everybody, and it doesn't need to be.
Right, right. That's absolutely fantastic. And guys, I mean, as you are here, there is a kind of spark in you to do something different. I mean, maybe you have been in jobs, and I think the people that kind of entrepreneurial, they can't really be told what to do, you know, when in a job kind of in a job environment. So they tend to go off and start up their own business. So, Bob, I mean, you've put a lot of emphasis on giving out value, right? Now, I did a kind of survey to my audience, and I asked them what is the biggest challenge that they face when they're facing sales. And they said that a lot of people, what they do is they tend to kind of ask for too much before they buy. So it's like literally giving away their product before the actual purchase order comes in. So what would your advice be to people that kind of find it hard to kind of give out value or don't even understand how much value to give out prehand?
No, it's a great question, and it all depends on what you do. It depends a lot on the product or service. For example, if you have an online business, it's a great idea to give out lots of information, because what you're doing is you're creating that trust with that between the person where they get to see, you know, what it is, the value you have to offer and what you do, but you also know that there's a lot more that you have that they're going to want.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So that's fine. But there's a difference between that and being what we call an unpaid consultant. That's not necessarily a good thing. So if you're giving away, you know, if somebody is, let's say you, and again, just without taking a specific example, something general, but you consult in a certain field, and this person who may be eventually your customer, your paid customer, is asking for, you know, some questions and some advice, you know, of course, you know, give them some, enough to show them where, yes, absolutely, you can help them doing this and give them tangible, value-based information they can use. Right. But if you feel as though it's a matter of they're trying to take advantage of you and just trying to get free information for from you so they don't have to pay for it, well, that's a line you certainly don't need to cross. You know, when we talk about the go-giver in the book, The Go-Giver, the basic premise, and this is important to explain because I think it has to do with answering your question. The basic premise is that shifting one's focus, and this is the key, shifting one's focus from getting to giving. And when we say giving, we simply mean constantly and consistently providing value to others. In other words, having a focus on providing value, and that doing so is not only a, you know, a nice way to live life, but a very financially profitable way as well. Let's not take the profit out of that, okay? You are in a business. You are exchange. You are making a value for value exchange. It's that the focus on what you're doing is on providing value to that person. But if they're just wanting a, you know, for you to do what you're doing for free for the sake of taking advantage, that should never, ever be confused with being a go-giver, and that's not something you should do or need to do.
I think you can kind of read people, right? When they approach you, you can kind of figure out what they're trying to get from you. So is it a lot of intuition comes into it as well, right?
Well, I think the more you do it, the more intuition you have that comes true. The interesting thing, the paradox about it, is that typically the more trusting of people you tend to be, the more easily you will be able to read it when someone is trying to take advantage of you. People think it's the opposite. They think, okay, if I don't trust anybody, I'm going to be... No, when you have a natural lack of trust for people, what happens is you suspect everybody of trying to take advantage of you. It's Stephen M. R. Covey, son of Dr. Stephen Covey, who wrote, you know, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a couple great books on trust. One is called The Speed of Trust, which is just one of the most terrific books I've ever read. But the other one is called Smart Trust. And he makes the point that, yes, you should assume the person is trustworthy, and that's fine, but there's a big difference between that and simply allowing yourself to be walked on. In other words, nothing about any of this should be confused with naivete.
Right, right. Absolutely fabulous. There you go, guys. Now, Bob, there's a couple of things that I'm interested in, right? First of all, I think the society, when it comes to sales, right, the word sales, in society, we kind of, if we're going to a car shop, for instance, we see the salesperson as someone that's trying to kind of draw your blood out. You know, instantly, it's just the kind of mindset, because they're coming from a place that the higher car they sell, the bigger the commission, and the person that's coming to buy, they're always kind of wary of that person. So the sales kind of approach isn't very, it's not kind of smooth. You know, you're kind of aware and you kind of put your guard up. And that's how people see sales now, because they think it's kind of a bad transaction. But how do we eliminate that kind of thinking? Sales is actually beautiful. It's actually paying someone for their blood, sweat, and energy, rather than having a negative approach to that.
Sure. Well, and unfortunately with automobile sales through the years, unfortunately as an industry, they've earned that reputation. Right. There are some wonderful, wonderful professional car salespeople who do a terrific job of focusing on the client and making sure they're taken care of, and, you know, it's terrific. But, you know, as an industry, no matter what industry or profession we're in, we train, in a sense, our customers, our prospects, how to buy from us. And unfortunately, car sales is one of those industries that has really done a really a lousy job of communicating their value, because they have, you know, actually earned that bad reputation, many of them, and it's too bad. Now, the good news about that, okay, is in an industry such as that, that has such a, unfortunately, lousy reputation, that car salesperson who is able to communicate trust and build a reputation within their community as that honest car salesperson, as that person you can trust who has your best interest at heart. That person's 9 steps ahead of the game in a 10-step game. Now, let's talk about sales, though, in and of itself, because sales in general has a bad reputation. Why it should? Well, it's because of salespeople who've given it a bad reputation.
Do you think it's lack of knowledge and their understanding of sales?
It is to a certain point, because if they really understood what sales was about, they would not come across that way. Yeah. See, many people, many consumers, and unfortunately, as you alluded to, many salespeople, unfortunately think selling is about trying to convince somebody to buy something they don't want or need. Yeah. And that's not true. Sales is just the opposite. It's finding out what someone does want or need and helping them to get it. Some people think selling is about taking advantage of others. It's not. As again, you alluded to earlier beautifully, it's about bringing them more advantage through your product or service. Probably the biggest misperception about selling is that it's about taking, and it's not. At its core, at its highest, at its utmost, at its most profitable, it's all about giving. And I actually mean that literally. Now, someone can say, wait a second, no, you mean that figuratively. No, I mean it literally. Because the old English root of the word sell was selan, which literally meant to give. So when you're selling, you're literally giving. Now, someone might say, well, wait a second, isn't that just semantics? I mean, when you're selling, what are you really giving? Well, let's take a look at it. Let's just say that you are doing a sales presentation. You have a prospect in front of you. If you're doing this correctly, you're in the selling process. If you are, what are you giving? I suggest you're giving them time, attention, counsel, education, empathy, and mostly value. So if you're in sales and you're doing it correctly, you are absolutely bringing and giving great value to the equation. One of my old heroes, Harry Brown, used to say, in a free market-based economy, profit is simply the result of pleasing another person. This is why my co-author, Go-Giver, John David Mann, and I say that money is simply an echo of value. Money is an echo of value. It's the thunder to value's lightning, which means that the value must come first. Value comes first, and the money is simply a very natural and direct result of the value you've provided.
Excellent, excellent. And also, Bob, I'd like to kind of give my little, an analogy of it, because say, for instance, you go to a high-end restaurant, the prices don't surprise you. Is it because of the experience that the restaurant's giving you, it's the way it makes you feel, that you expect the price to be high of that? So would people need to kind of match that in their business? So concentrate on how you make the other person feel by giving high-end value, and then the price doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, that's a great point. What happens is when you're not able to effectively communicate your value to others, and that when I say the value, I mean of the product and service, also the additional value you provide and give just by being you and the things you do. When you're not able to separate yourself, because let's face it, technology has pretty much leveled the playing field. Pretty much every product works, most services, somebody might be a little bit, but it's pretty much the same. So you need to be that additional value, and you need to communicate that additional value. Otherwise, what happens is you get into the very counterproductive game of trying to sell on low price. Wow. When you try and sell on low price, when you sell on price, you're looked at as a commodity. When you sell on value, you're looked at as a resource. So rather than on trying to lower your price, which by the way makes it so you're not having as much fun, it's hard for you to service the client properly, you're not making enough margin to comfortably run the business and so forth, no. Instead, focus on better communicating your value. That is absolutely key. And it's important to understand that value is always in the eyes of the beholder. It's not what we think they should find of value. It's what they find to be of value.
Excellent. So more study of your of people then, isn't it? It's having more awareness of what they need rather than what you can give. Would that be right? So understanding what their problems are, focusing on what kind of area they need help on, rather than saying, look, my product this, my product that, but find out what the problem is that you can solve, right?
Well, yes, remember, and as my good friend Sean Woodruff, a terrific entrepreneur, as he says, what a professional salesperson does is they match the benefits of their product or service with the wants, needs, and desires of the prospect. And the only way we can know that is to ask the correct questions and listen. Not listen just to answer, but listen to understand. Another thing that I suggest to people is the value you think they see in what you do may not necessarily be what they really see it as being, because we see the world through our own eyes, okay? And so what we find to be of value, we assume they do as well. Now, if we do it that way, every so often when we have a person, a prospect who thinks like us, yes, we'll communicate it perfectly. But that's not necessarily the case. So what I suggest people do is interview those people who are your current customers and clients, the good ones, the ones who love you, the ones who refer you to others, and ask them, what is the value as you see it?
Right, right.
Bring to the table, both through our products and services, as well as that additional excellence, consistency, attention, you know, empathy and appreciation that you feel, you know, everything combined. What do you see of being of value? And what you'll do is you'll find that what you see as the value you bring is only a small part of the story.
Right, right. Excellent. There you go, guys. The questions are pouring in, but I need to kind of just tap into a little bit more on Bob, and then I'll start answering some questions. So, Bob, what about, like, okay, I saw a video of yours, right, and it was a really good explanation of cost versus value. Cost versus price.
Was it price versus value? There's a couple of them. One is price versus value, and another one is price and cost.
Where you gave the Zig Ziglar example?
Ah, that one. That's one of my favorites.
I'd love you to share that, because I really found that inspiring, because it completely changed my vision of it. So if you can kind of explain what the problem that you were facing at the time and how you handled that.
Right. That was the one you're talking about where Zig was speaking at one of my events.
Yes, that's right.
On stage when I was doing that for him in his voice.
Yes, that's right.
That was a real
video, guys. It's brilliant.
I used to hold these yearly events. That's not a big part of my business. I'm usually speaking at other events, but every year for I think about 6 years, we held one event a year, and one of them we had Zig Ziglar. In fact, we presented him. John David Mann and I presented him with the first annual Go Giver's Lifetime Achievement Award. Of course, Zig was famous for many things, but one of them was his wonderful saying, you can have everything in life you want if you'll just help enough other people get what they want.
Wonderful.
And that was one of Zig's actually last programs that he did before he passed, and it was the only one where his wife, the famous redhead, Jean Ziglar, was up on stage with him. Uh-huh. And his son Tom was on stage with us as well. So that was a real thrill. But anyway, I was talking about how when I first got into sales, as we were talking about before, and I started realizing Zig was one of the first, along with Tom Hopkins, who I began studying. And I was in a business at the time in which it was a very expensive product. It was a great product, but it was very expensive. And it was really a one-call close. I mean, you were greeted at the door, and the prospect told you, you know, welcome to our home. I just want to let you know we ain't buying nothing tonight, okay? And that's what they said. And you had about 3 hours at the kitchen table with the husband and wife. And basically, you know, they either purchased or they didn't. You know, if they said I'll think it over and that was it, it never happened. It just didn't. So it's just one of those types of sales. And so one of my big challenges was, you know, when I started to, and this is before I heard Zig, I had a big challenge with the objection, your price is too high.
Right.
Because it was an expensive product. Now, it was a great product, and it paid for itself within 3 years, and from that point on, it was all profit for the customer. But, hey, it was still a one-call close. They didn't know you yet. You came in as a stranger, And now eventually I would turn that into more of a referral-based business, but I was just starting out, and that's how it was. And I had trouble with your price is too high objection for a couple of reasons. One, because by the very nature of the thing, it was a high-priced product. But the other one was my own mental state, because I was broke. In fact, I said in the video, I was so poor at the time that my goal, my immediate short-term goal, was working my way up to being broke. I mean, I wasn't even at that point. So when they said the price is too high, you know, I maybe had the response that I was trained to give, but inside my head, my heart, I was thinking, well, you're right, it is really high, you know. And that's not, so I had gone shortly after that, I went to a seminar where Zig spoke. And at the end of his talk, I bought his tapes. Back then they were tapes, not even CDs. They were called cassette tape albums. Right. And I remember listening, but I probably listened to them probably, I think, 15 times in a row. I mean, without stop. Just went 1 through 6, 1 through 6, 1 through 6, 1 through 6. But on the last time listening to it, and I remember I was driving a long distance to an appointment. And for some reason, on the 16th time that I heard it, I heard him talk about how to work within the your price is too high objection. Now, why had I not heard it the other 15 times? I don't know. Maybe I wasn't ready for it, or it just happened to be other things were happening, because I was always listening while I was driving. I don't know. But I heard it this time. And he talked about how to answer that question.
Wow, excellent.
And, you know, basically, and I, without doing it in Zig's voice on this, when the person that he, you know, was in a situation where the person said, Zig, your price is too high, and he said, well, when you say the price is too high, are you talking about the price or the cost? And the person answered, well, I don't understand. What's the difference? And Zig explained that price is a one-time thing. You know, you pay it once. Cost is a lifetime thing.
Excellent, yeah.
You know, at our company, the people who founded our company had a decision to make. Did we want to explain price one time or ongoing shoddy quality and overall higher cost, you know, over the lifetime? And Zig said, you know, if you're the type of person I think you are, and I do believe you are, you know, you're more interested in the, you know, in the price or something like it. It was something like that. Now, so what happened? It's been a while since I've said that, but anyway. and so the person, so that was it. So what happened with me was I was on my appointment that night, and the person said, you know, Mr. Berg, you know, this might be a good system and all, but your price is way too high. And now I had just listened to Zig's tapes. So I now felt equipped. And so I said to the person, not in Zig's voice, but in my voice, I said to the person, you know, because Zig has a very distinctive voice, I said, well, Mr. Prospect, just for my own clarification, when you say the price is too high, are you talking about the price or the cost? And he said, I don't understand. What's the difference? And I remember thinking to myself, wow, you know, this person not only knows the script, you know, he's following the script because he said the same thing that Zig's person said, right? and the person said, well, you know, what's the difference?
Right.
And I said, well, you know, and I explained that price is a one-time thing, cost is a lifetime thing, and so forth and so on. And the sale was made that night because he understood that, you know, you pay a price one time, but if the but if the quality of the product is bad, if you're going to have to continue to get repairs, if you're going to have to put a lot of time and energy and aggravation into it, all those are the cost. So if you're looking at, you know, a low price but a high cost, that's not very productive. It's better to pay a little bit more money for a quality product.
Excellent, yes. Because it kind of, yeah. Because I think when people think of cost, they think monetary value, don't they? They don't think of the time that it's going to save. Time is cost, right? Time
right.
Information that you may find in those products might save you the time, it might save you how to handle things, or give you that information that makes things like easier for you to deal with rather than having to kind of, you know, the problem of you not knowing that information. It's a higher cost. That's what it's basically saying, right?
You know, it's interesting. There's a saying. It was written by John Ruskin. He was an English critic and essayist who lived from 1819 to 1900. And it's actually this particular wisdom that he wrote that Zig Ziglar based his price versus cost response on, which you just pointed out very eloquently. And here's what John Ruskin said. It is unwise to pay too much, but it's worse to pay too little. When you pay too much, you lose a little money. That's all. When you pay too little, you sometimes lose everything because the thing you bought was incapable of doing the thing it was bought to do.
Right.
The common law of business balance, Ruskin wrote, prohibits paying a little and getting a lot. It can't be done. If you deal with the lowest bidder, it is well to add something for the risk you run. And if you do that, you will have enough to pay for something better.
That's beautiful. Amazing.
Yeah, so that's really, but there's also a difference between price and value that's important for people to understand. And, you know, the law of value in the Go-Giver, the law of value was the first law, the foundational law. And the law of value says that your true worth is determined by how much more you give in value than you take in payment. But, you know, when you first hear that, it sounds sort of counterproductive. How do you give more in value than you take in payment and not go out of business? It sounds like a recipe for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
And in this case, the difference between price and value.
Right.
See, price is a dollar amount or a pound amount in England. Okay, it's finite. It is what it is. Value, on the other hand, is the relative worth or desirability of a thing to the end user. In other words, what is it about this thing, this product, this service, this concept, this idea that brings with it so much worth or value that someone will willingly exchange their time and money and so forth for this value and feel great about it while you make a healthy profit? Could I give you one very quick example?
Yes.
Well, let's say you hire an accountant to do your income taxes, and this accountant charges you £1,000 to do that. Well, that's his fee or his price, £1,000. But through his diligence, his experience, his knowledge, his listening to you and determining what you need and better understanding how your business works through all of that, he's able to save you £5,000 in taxes.
Right.
It also saves you countless hours that frees you up to do what you would rather do and what you're more qualified to do and can do more productively. He also provides you and your family with the security and the peace of mind of knowing it was done correctly.
Right.
So we see here that, again, while price is finite, value can be both concrete in terms of the £5,000 that he saved you, but also conceptual. Intangible in terms of the peace of mind and security, which probably holds more value to most people than even the money and so forth. So what he did is he gave you more in value. He gave you well over £5,000 in overall use value in exchange for £1,000 of use value or price.
Right.
So you came away from it feeling great, and he made a very healthy profit. So it's basically, it's an exchange of value. And again, in a free market, where basically what all that means is nobody is forced to do business from you. They're going to do business with you because they feel there's more value to them in doing so than in what they're giving up or what they're paying for it. In this kind of exchange, both parties come away from it much better off than they were before.
Right. Excellent. It's an excellent example. I just want to kind of hold that example a minute and use it as a further example to say, for instance, this accountant, right? He set his price as £1,000 for his services, but how can he convince the other party that they are going to save a certain amount without actually doing the work prehand, if you see what I mean? Because the accountant doesn't want to spend too much time analyzing it and then not getting the kind of sale for the service that he's going to offer. So pre-hand, how does he convince the other party that this is what's going to happen without actually doing the work? So where does the line of value come in there?
Well, there's no guarantee that the person's going to save money on their taxes. That person might owe taxes.
Right, right.
But what that accountant needs to do is communicate with through their expertise and their ability to understand that person's business. And of course, a referral is great or an introduction, because somebody else who this person knows, likes, and trusts has already given you a vicarious experience because yeah. they've done business with this person. That's also why testimonial endorsements are so important. But you've got to be able to communicate your value. And so through asking that person the right questions and so forth, what it's doing is it's assuring this person that they're going to have better results with this particular accountant than they would by not using this particular accountant. So it's not so much a matter of, you can't guarantee you're going to save someone money before you've ever had a chance to look through their things. What it is, it's communication that the value is going to be the best it can possibly be.
Excellent. Absolutely fantastic. There you go, guys. Right, so one last thing before I hop to the questions, and time is actually whizzing along. But Bob, what about, okay, you know when we give, right, there's a part in our brain, there's something scientific going on, right? There's a part in our brain called the limbic part of our brain that doesn't know whether it's giving or receiving, so it gives that experience and a good feeling when we give something away. Can you kind of explain that in a more scientific approach, that what is actually going on when we give without expectation?
Well, there are a couple of dynamics at work here. First of all, I think you are more maybe talking about giving in terms of charity in this case. And that's not really what being a go-giver is. I mean, hopefully many go-givers are charitable, you know, that we hold that as a very high value. But really, when we talk about the go-giver, we're talking more of a business strategy and a way of doing business as well as living life, focusing on providing value to others. When it comes to charity, you know, something we highly recommend, it's a great feeling because you're coming from a place of abundance. You know, you're giving something of yourself, and that person will never know, or that, you know, that animal shelter, or whatever it happens to be that you're supporting, you know, they'll never know you're doing it. Just a great feeling. You're coming from abundance. You're giving away. You're giving a part of you. But the interesting thing about that is when you give away a part of you that way, you're not losing anything. You're gaining, because you're giving because it's in alignment. It's congruent with your values. So you feel good about it. Okay. You know, when we talk about this in the business sense, what we're talking about is, you know, and it's funny, because I often hear the saying, give without expectation. And I know what's meant by that. What I think it really means is give without attachment.
Right.
Because I expect great things to happen all the time. I would never do anything without expecting a good thing to happen. Why not? We have choices of what we expect. We might as well expect good things to happen. But what I think that means is give without an emotional attachment that it has to come from that person, or it has to come from any person. You know what I'm saying? We give value because it's congruent with our beliefs. We love to provide value to others, to our prospects, to our customers, to our clients. It might be just introducing someone to someone else, and there's no reason to think anything's ever going to come out of it, and that's okay, because it's a good feeling to know you're adding to the life of someone else. So I would say, you know, give without attachment to anything having to happen, but know that every time you do give of yourself to someone, every time you give value to someone, you're, in a sense, you're leaving footprints, and you're increasing your influence. That's why we say the law of left field, which is a term in the U.S., because in baseball, this something comes from left field, part of a baseball, it also means coming from out of nowhere. And sometimes something good happens. We receive this magnificent referral or make some crucial connection that just comes out of nowhere. But it really doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes out of everywhere, because you've planted so many seeds of goodwill, of great will. Yeah. You've created a situation where so many people feel so good about you. They know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to see you succeed. They want to add value to your life, that the world has become what we call a benevolent context.
Right.
And so, you know, it really works like that. So I think when we give of ourselves and we give value and we do this in a way that we are not attached to the results, but we're confident that the results are going to happen, not because of some magical thing. It has nothing to do with that. It just makes sense. Remember, and as one of the mentors in the story told Joe, the protege, all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. So as your influence continues to spread, more and more comes back to you. You just have to make yourself willing to receive that abundance.
That receptive. Yeah, that's one of your laws, isn't it, Bob? I'm actually getting questions here. Talk about your five laws, please. So, okay, let's go for the five laws. You mentioned the first one, which is value, and explained that beautifully. And the second is compensation. Could you explain that?
Well, the law of compensation says that your income is determined by how many people you serve and how well you serve them. So where law number one says to give more in value than you take in payment, law number two tells us that the more people whose lives we touch with the exceptional value we provide, the more money with which we'll be rewarded. Nicole Martin, the CEO in the story, one of the mentors, said to Joe that while law number one, the law of value, is very important, that only represents your potential income.
Right. Right.
It's not enough to just provide great value to one person. Law number two, the law of compensation, that represents your actual income. It's based on the number of lives you impact with your excellence, with your value, with your product or service. Law number three. Oh, go ahead.
No, go ahead. Go. Oh, sorry, I was just going to say on that note, I had a question from Laura. Thank you very much, Laura, for tuning in. She said, how do I figure out what my value is? I'm very new to this industry. I've just launched a couple of products, but I don't know how to place a value on them. So would you say maybe kind of doing trial runs for her or something like that? Or
well, it sounds what Laura's asking is, what price should she charge?
Yes.
Saying, what value do I provide? But that's actually, Laura, a different question than, you know, remember, your price is what you're charging. The value is what you're giving, okay?
Right.
And so, I don't know your industry, so I don't know the price. You need to test on price. It's ultimately what the market will bear, but what the market will bear becomes more and more based on how well you're able to communicate your value. So this is one reason why you get together with a coach like Princess, who can help you dispassionately figure out what exactly it is that you do offer in value. Because remember, you probably don't know the extent of the great value you offer because you're thinking about your product or service. But how does that product or service connect with the wants, needs, and desires of your customers? So this is where the research really comes in. What do they see in the value or in the potential value, and then you put a price with that. And, you know, I find out what others are charging, of course, but don't try to undercut them. Put your price a little higher.
Right.
Your price a little higher. Be that person who they're paying more for, because they're going to attract the people who are looking for that, okay? And they're the easiest people to work with once you've identified them and you've made it easy for them to identify you.
Excellent. And a way of measuring value is probably getting testimonials of people that have tested your product and endorsements and people talking about you. So social media that way can kind of help you grow your profile in a way, right?
Yes, exactly. And remember to ask them. Ask the people who've used your product or service and have experienced you, the value you provide. What do they see as the value? Remember, we talked about this. Our value is always in the eyes of the beholder. So find out from the beholder what they see as being of value.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much, Bob. And moving swiftly on to your third law of influence.
Well, the law of influence says your influence is determined by how abundantly you place other people's interests first. And again, this sounds counterproductive, but all the great leaders, top influencers, and profitable salespeople, this is how they run their lives and conduct their businesses. They're always looking for ways to make their win about the other person's win. They've moved from an I focus or me focus to an other focus, always looking for ways to add value. One of the great authors from the United Kingdom, Thomas Powers, who wrote Networking for Life, he's the founder of eCademy. He wrote, the energy comes from what he calls the willing suspension of self-interest, not the foregoing of self-interest. As human beings, we are self-interested. We don't need to deny that. That would be wrong. We are, but what we can do is we can delay that self-interest. Okay, we can, in other words, just put it aside, put it in parentheses or in brackets, and focus totally on the value we bring to others. Now, when we say place other people's interests first, again, this does not mean you should be anybody's doormat or a martyr or self-sacrificial in any way. Not at all. It simply goes back again to all things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. And you know what? There's no faster, more powerful, or more effective way to elicit those know, like, and trust feelings toward you from others than by authentically placing their interest first and focusing on them.
Excellent, excellent. There we are, guys. That's beautiful. And the last one is law of receptivity.
Well, there's law of authenticity, which is... The law of authenticity very quickly simply says the most valuable gift you have to offer is yourself. One of the mentors in the story, Deborah, talked about how she learned early in her career that all the skills in the world, the sales skills, technical skills, people skills, as important as they are, and indeed they are very, very important, they're all for naught if you don't come at it from your true authentic core. Now, when you do, when you, as I like to say, show up as yourself day after day, week after week, month after month, people feel very comfortable with you. They feel good about you. They know you. They like you. They trust you. I think they see a consistency that's very important to people. I always loved what Gandhi said about integrity, when he defined it as, you know, when everything you think and everything you feel and everything you say and everything you do are in alignment.
Right.
People respect congruency. They're attracted to congruency. And so it's key that we operate from our true sense, our core of authenticity.
That's absolutely beautiful. And then the last one, before I ask you the next question, Bob, the last one is law of receptivity.
This one simply says the key to effective giving is to stay open to receiving. Late in the story, Pindar, the main mentor, asked Joe to breathe out and hold that breath to the count of 30. Now, I do this a lot of times when I'm speaking at a big conference. I'll have everybody in the office say, let's all breathe out, and let's try to hold that breath at the count of 30. And we breathe out. And in about 10 seconds, we all start laughing, because that's about how long it is before, you know, we have to, you know, one Joe who was struggling for air. And Pindar said, what's the matter, Joe? Can't do it. And Joe said, well, no, I can't just breathe out. I've got to also breathe in. Pindar jokingly said, well, Joe, what if I was to tell you it's been medically proven that it's actually healthier to breathe out than it is to breathe in? Mm-hmm. And Joe just laughed. He said, that's silly. You can't. You can't do one or the other. You've got to do both. Exactly. We breathe out. We breathe in. We breathe out carbon dioxide. We breathe in oxygen. We breathe out, which is a form of giving. We breathe in, which is a form of receiving. See, in this world where we're so often taught, whether it's by media or government or this or that, about the lack in the world and how money is evil and all this horrible things that we're hit with, and we tend to take that in on an unconscious level, which is really where it sticks. Many people tend to believe that giving and receiving are opposite concepts, but they're not.
No.
Giving and receiving are simply two sides of the very same coin.
Wonderful.
And like breathing out and breathing in, they work together. The key isn't whether you're a giver or a receiver. You should be a giver and a receiver. The key, though, is focus. Focus on the giving of value. Focus on giving, and then allow the receiving.
Excellent. That's beautiful. It comes into like kind of deserving to receive as well. So that's another kind of show altogether. Being thinking of yourself as deserving the amount you're giving out as well. So, Bob, can I just kind of highlight before, I mean, it's coming up to an hour, the hour's just kind of shot by, but I'm going to play the devil's advocate a little bit, right? I like doing this because I like to kind of come from the people that don't really know much. And the questions that you ask, I want to ask you, right, so I've started up a business, I'm new, and I'm not working, so obviously I'm not getting an income coming in. I've got the kind of the uncertainty of how much money I'm going to make. I've got bills piling up, you know, I've got that pressure, and I need to make these sales, right? And how does a person kind of control their emotions that way? Understand that, okay, fair enough, those things are going on, but separate yourself and not kind of be desperate for the sale and push out that desperate energy, rather, do you see what I mean, where I'm coming from? Like, rather than focus on the value, rather than actually kind of focusing on how much money I'm going to get out of this to pay my bills. Because I can understand where people get really frustrated and the anxiety kicks in that I need to pay these bills, I've got kids to look after or whatever it is, but kind of separating that transaction.
You know, well, there's a couple things there, and you make a great point. First, you know, I wouldn't go full-time into a business until you have a little bit of a cushion so you don't have that desperation, because desperation is a difficult thing. You know, I call it a lack of posture. It's when you need the sale so much, you need it more than that person. You know, you think you need the money more than they need your product or service, and when that's the case, it's not a good situation because nobody wants to buy from someone who seems to need them too much.
And they can pick up on that, right? They can actually pick up from the way you talk, the voice, the kind of approach that you come with, they can pick up.
So now let's say you are in that situation, okay, and you need to make the sale. So here's where you've got to say to yourself, which is going to be more effective, okay? Am I going to be more effective by caring about the money and the commission? Is that going to make me more effective or less effective? See, nobody's going to buy from you because you need to make a sale. They're going to buy from you because they believe that the value they're going to receive is greater than what they're paying. Okay? So you've got to understand that you've got to put yourself in the mindset that if you really, really need to make this sale, the best thing you can do is put out of your mind that you need to make the sale and focus 100% on providing value to this person, on asking questions and listening. Again, as I said earlier, not listening to answer and close the sale, but listening to understand so you know how to better make the connection between the benefits of your product or service and their needs, wants, or desires. So what you've got to understand is, regardless of how desperate you may feel, they're not going to buy because of that. It's good, and if anything, they're not going to buy because of that. So you've got to put yourself in that mindset. The paradox is, to the degree you can put yourself in the mindset where you're not focusing on the money, but instead focusing on the value you're providing to that other person, that's the degree that the chances are best you're going to be able to receive that money.
Excellent, excellent. And I think that's the key to success, looking at the long-term picture. Fair enough, you might convince someone to make sales.
But it's also short. But you know what, though? But it's also short-term, because remember, I didn't say you're not going to make the sale. I just said your focus is on providing value to them. Right. Okay? So it's not like you're saying, oh, I'm not going to make the, even though I'm really desperate, I'm not going to make the sale, I'm going to do, no. Being a go-giver doesn't mean you don't make the sale.
Yes.
Yeah, no, the sale's going to, I'm saying it's more likely to happen short term if you're in a situation where it should be short term. If it shouldn't, you can't, and you try to rush it, it's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. But if that person, it's a matter of, you know, you're doing a presentation which is either going to result in a sale or not, the chances of that sale happening is going to be much better because you focused not on the money but on that other person, providing value to that person.
Excellent, excellent. Well, there you go, guys. Excellent explanation by Bob. You've got to get the book, okay? Bob's link is there. It's Bob Berg.com. I'll put that under the video as well. So you can go there and purchase the book from his website. And he's also got an incredible blog as well, which is always updated with amazing information. Now, Bob, you've been absolutely extraordinary. It's just coming over the hour, and I have to quickly rush and pick up my daughter from dance school. But I want to kind of ask you to very kindly, as you are on the I Have a Dream show, can you share your dream with the audience?
Can I share my dream?
Yes.
I can't say that I have one overriding dream at this point. I've had 56 years to kind of figure out things as I've gone along, and yes. I've been fortunate to create a life for myself that I enjoy very much. Uh-huh. And you know, I have goals and so forth. But as far as an overall dream at this point, no, just to keep doing what I'm doing and growing and improving and getting better at living and doing those things.
That's absolutely beautiful. There you go, guys. And go to his website, as I said, and you find out how to get the book, Go Giver. There's another book out, haven't you? You've got another book.
Adversaries
into Allies.
In fact, if they go on the Berg.com page, if they go to where it says Influence and Success Insights, they can fill that up, put their email address on there, and they'll actually get chapter one of several of my books, including The Go-Giver and Adversaries into Allies.
That's absolutely fantastic. So the links will be below the video. Guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Bob, how can I thank you? You've been absolutely amazing. Thank you for bringing on a wealth of information in 1 hour. I know it's very short time, but you've done an incredible job.
You're a wonderful host. Thank you. And thank you, everybody, for listening in. I wish you all the very best of success.
Thank you very much. And we'll definitely have Bob back because these topics, they go very, very deep, guys. We've literally touched the surface. His book explains it much more deeply, but we'll definitely bring back Bob back to maybe talk about some more areas that you would like clarification on. But thank you very much for tuning in. Have an incredible day. Tune in on Friday. I've got the wonderful Lawrence Tam coming on, and he'll be talking about how to be a dad and have a career and be a good husband at the same time. So that's a nice kind of overall topic for us to talk about and wrap up the week with. But thank you very much, Bob Berg, for coming onto the show. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Oh, thank you so much.
Take care, everybody. Goodbye.
Hey, it's Princess Fizz again. I hope you found this show extremely, extremely valuable. Do like and comment and leave a review for this show, and don't forget to subscribe and share with your friends, whoever it will benefit. Go to ihaveadreamshow.com/shows if you want to watch the video recording of this show. And leave a comment, write to me. I'd love to hear from my listeners about any suggestions, any takeaways that you had, any suggestions for improvements, and make sure that you sign up to the newsletter as well so you don't miss another episode and you get notified by email. I love you loads. Dream big, chase those dreams, make them a reality so I can bring you onto the I Have a Dream show and share your unique journey with the world.